minutes and about 20 seconds. In a little over 6 minutes, 17 of our friends were taken from us, 15 were injured, and everyone, absolutely everyone, in the Douglas community was forever altered.
My name is Marlon Bundo, and I am a bunny.
My name is Wesley, said Wesley.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Trump runs his military trans ban up the flagpole. Youth take the lead in rallies against gun violence. And a gay bunny hops your way just in time for Easter. Her stories and more this week, now that you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Frances O'Brien.
And I'm Seth Eric Cutler.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending March 24th, 2018. Weeks after U.S. Defense Secretary James Mattis reportedly sent the conclusions of yet another Pentagon study on service by transgender troops to the president, the Trump administration issued a memo late in the evening on March 23rd that bans future enlistments by transgender recruits who might require surgery or other major medical treatment, except in certain undefined cases, and denies trans-related military health care to those who are already serving honorably. The Defense Department studied the issue during Barack Obama's tenure and recommended that the president open service to qualified transgender enlistees, which he did in 2016. Trump has systematically reversed, or has tried to reverse, virtually every other progressive Obama-era policy. As Politico noted in its early analysis, the March 23rd White House memo provides few details about how the ban will be implemented, what will happen to those who are currently serving, and under which limited circumstances transgender troops may be able to serve. It does state that the Defense Secretary Mattis will have some latitude in enforcing the policy. The memo claimed that Mattis has concluded that the policy should be adopted by the Defense Department and that the Department of Homeland Security, which oversees the Coast Guard, had also signed off on the new policy. The Pentagon has insisted, however, that no policy change would be implemented until several legal challenges to the ban are resolved.
Meanwhile, Trump's Department of Justice is defying a federal court order to provide the names of the generals and other military experts with whom the president claims to have consulted before tweeting his intentions in July 2017 to ban transgender people from serving in the U.S. Armed Forces. Washington state-based U.S. District Court Judge Marshall Peckman, who's hearing one of a number of legal challenges to the ban in federal courts across the country, gave the government's lawyers until March 22nd to provide the names. Instead, the Justice Department filed papers claiming that executive privilege allows them to keep those names under wraps. Executive privilege allows the president, they say, to keep certain information confidential if it's in the public interest. Though it's hard to see what public interest is served by keeping the names, if any really exist, secret. Four federal courts have already issued injunctions against any enforcement of a ban until their respective lawsuits are settled. The issue will almost certainly require a definitive ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court.
Swedish lawmakers voted this week to compensate their transgender citizens who are forced to undergo sterilization before their gender identity could be legally changed. That requirement was abolished by Parliament in 2013. MPs voted this week to pay the equivalent of about $27,000 to each of the estimated 700 people who were affected by that law during the 41 years it was on the books. This week's vote made Sweden the first country on the planet to compensate transgender sterilization victims. A statement issued by RFSL, Sweden's leading queer rights group, noted that money can't undo the harm of unwillingly losing your reproductive abilities, but the monetary compensation is an important step for the state to make amends to all those subjected to this treatment. even though the European Court of Human Rights ruled last year that the practice violates human rights. 16 countries in the region, according to Pink News, still require transgender people to be sterilized before they're allowed to change their gender designation on government documents. Applications for compensation in Sweden will be available on May 1st and must be submitted to the country's Legal, Financial, and Administrative Services Agency by May 1st, 2020.
Elsewhere, an appeals court in Mombasa, Kenya, ruled this week that the use of forced anal examinations on men suspected of being gay violates the East African nation's constitution. A lower court had upheld the practice to supposedly determine if a man has engaged in homosexual activity, but it's been ridiculed as bogus by most reputable national medical organizations, including Kenya's, and condemned by global human rights groups as torture. The ruling was a victory for the two men who were arrested in 2015 under Kenya's British colonial-era law and forced to undergo anal exams and HIV testing to determine if they'd engaged in consensual sex. Those acts were punishable in Kenya by up to 14 years in prison. The two men were represented by the country's National Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission. The group said in a press release that the humiliation and pain caused by these useless anal examinations will follow our clients for the rest of their lives. However, we are emboldened to see our constitution at work, ensuring that all Kenyans have the right to dignity.
Kenya's High Court is expected to announce a ruling in another case challenging the anti-gay sex law itself on April 26th. The justices heard testimony from LGBT rights advocates, Christian and Muslim groups, and the Attorney General's office during 3 days of hearings in late April and early March. The government argued that decriminalization was a slippery slope that would lead to marriage equality. According to the government's own figures, close to 600 people were prosecuted for violating Kenya's anti-gay sex law between 2010 and 2014. Edwin Sisenge of the African Equality Foundation praised the Kenya court ruling that ended the use of forced anal exams. He urged the government of the UK to speak out against anti-queer discrimination in Kenya and in all of its Commonwealth countries in order to avoid such ill and unlawful treatments of innocent gay people when the Commonwealth heads of government meet in London in late April.
In other news, Sex and the City's Miranda, self-identified bisexual Cynthia Nixon, announced her candidacy this week for governor of the state of New York. She says she's offering a more progressive agenda than Democratic incumbent Mario Cuomo. The 51-year-old Nixon, who's won a Grammy, an Emmy, and a Tony, is currently married to Christine Marinomi, a former aide to New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio. The couple has a young son. Nixon says her major campaign issues will focus on failing infrastructure, government corruption, and income inequality. "I think it's time, not just in New York State, but all over this country," Nixon said at one of her initial campaign stops, "to hear from the voices of real people who understand that our government is in the clutches of millionaires, billionaires, and corporations." Cuomo dismissed Nixon's candidacy in one of his first public comments, telling reporters that, "We're in the political silly season now. I've been here before. We're in a democracy. Anybody can run. Anybody can say whatever they want to say." Most mainstream queer advocacy groups who've weighed in thus far are either supporting Cuomo, a longtime LGBT rights ally, or are staying neutral.
And finally, Ted Olson, the Republican lawyer who represented George W. Bush at the U.S. Supreme Court in the contested 2000 presidential election against Al Gore, but who joined his liberal opponent in that case, David Boies, to successfully challenge California's marriage equality denying Proposition 8 in 2013, was offered a job on Donald Trump's legal defense team this week. Trump advisor Kellyanne Conway reportedly recommended the hire to the president as his agitation grows over looming investigations into his financial empire and ties between Russia and his presidential campaign, and as he scrambles to line up worthy adversaries to Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller. Though Olson himself declined comment, he only took a day to make a decision. A terse media statement issued by a spokesman for the litigation group in which Olson is a partner simply said that, "I can confirm that Theodore B. Olson will not be representing Trump."
That's News Wrap. Global Queer News with Attitude for the week ending March 24th, 2018, produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Frances O'Brien.
And I'm Seth Eric Cutler.
Survivors from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, and we also wrote the song Shine.
This song is not only dedicated to the 17 and 14 injured, the 17 victims that we lost, it's dedicated to all their friends and family, and to anyone who's ever experienced gun violence.
Together, we are going to be the change. We are going to change the world. Thank you.
We refuse to be ignored by those who will not listen. We deserve to feel safe in our own schools. The time for change is now.
The smallest of words can make the biggest difference.
Be the voice for those who don't have one.
Together, we have the power to change the world around us.
A new generation of activists shines from Washington, D.C. to cities around the world on March 24th in coordinated mass actions demanding an end to American gun violence. Close to a million demonstrators crammed the National Mall in response to the call issued by students from Parkland, Florida's Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, the scene of the most recent mass shooting. It may have been a first for the young rally organizers, but there were constant reminders of their movement predecessors, including one of the 11-year-olds who addressed the rally crowd.
I have a dream that enough is enough. And that this should be a gun-free world, period. Will you please repeat these words after me? Spread the word!
Have you heard?
All across the nation.
More than a pep rally, speakers like Stoneman Douglas Jr. Alex Wind emphasized a clear strategy to pressure lawmakers for change.
For too long, our government has been useless on this issue. Our job as their constituents is to make sure we know what they're thinking. There are over 250 representatives that have not come out with a public stance on this issue. It is our job to make sure that we call them up and force them out of the shadows of corruption and into the light of justice. Now, we need to come together on all fronts and push aside those that divide us. Now we need to get on the phone and call our representatives and push them to stop incumbency and take action. Now we need to educate ourselves on which politicians are truly working for the people and which ones we want to vote out. It is not about your race. It is not about your sexual orientation. It is not about your ethnicity. It is not about your gender. It is not about where you live or how much money you make. And it most certainly is not about political party. All it comes down to is life or death. To all the politicians out there, if you take money from the NRA, you have chosen death. If you have not expressed to your constituents a public stance on this issue, you have chosen death. If you do not stand with us by saying we need to pass common sense gun legislation, you have chosen death. And none of the millions of people marching in this country today will stop until they see those against us out of office, because we choose life. Thank you. I love you all.
The most powerful speech of the day was the one that used the fewest words. After calling out the spirits of her lost schoolmates and teachers, Stoneman Douglas Gay Straight Alliance President Emma Gonzalez stood in almost uncanny dignity for an extended silence, representing the length of time it took for them to be killed, interrupted only occasionally by the hushed crowd of hundreds of thousands of people with shouts of support, or by Emma's sniffling.
6 minutes and about 20 seconds. In a little over 6 minutes, 17 of our friends were taken from us, 15 were injured, and everyone, absolutely everyone, in the Douglas community was forever altered. Everyone who was there understands. Everyone who has been touched by the cold grip of gun violence understands. For us, long, tearful, chaotic hours in the scorching afternoon sun were spent not knowing. No one understood the extent of what had happened. No one could believe that there were bodies in that building waiting to be identified for over a day. No one knew that the people who were missing had stopped breathing long before any of us had even known that a code red had been called. No one could comprehend the devastating aftermath or how far this would reach or where this would go. For those who still can't comprehend because they refuse to, I'll tell you where it went. Right into the ground, 6 feet deep. 6 minutes and 20 seconds with an AR-15, and my friend Carmen would never complain to me about piano practice. Aaron Feist would never call Kira Miss Sunshine. Alex Schachter would never walk into school with his brother Ryan. Scott Beagle would never joke around with Cameron at camp. Helena Ramsey would never hang out after school with Max. Gina Montalto would never wave to her friend Liam at lunch. Joaquin Oliver would never play basketball with Sam or Dylan. Elena Petty would never. Kara Lugren would never. Chris Hickson would never. Luke Hoyer would never. Marquin Duque Aguiano would never. Peter Wang would never. Alyssa Alhadaf would never. Jamie Guttenberg would never. Meadow Pollock would never. Since the time that I came out here, it has been 6 minutes and 20 seconds. The shooter has ceased shooting and will soon abandon his rifle, blend in with the students as they escape and walk free for an hour before arrest. Fight for your lives before it's someone else's job.
Thank you. Hey, everybody, this is Leah Delaria, and you are listening to This Way Out.
U.S. Vice President Mike Pence's family has a pet rabbit named Marlon Bundo. His daughter Charlotte wrote a children's book about the bunny called Marlon Bundo's A Day in the Life of the Vice President. Proceeds are being donated to charity. John Oliver, host of HBO's Last Week Tonight, spent about 20 minutes of his latest show detailing Mike Pence's anti-queer history, which is long and ugly. Oliver focused on Pence's decades-long close relationship with uber-Christian evangelical James Dobson, founder of Focus on the Family, which still includes claims on its website that a homosexual orientation is curable. Oliver's lengthy indictment led up to the announcement that he was publishing a parody children's book of his own called A Day in the Life of Marlon Bundo, in which the main character meets and falls in love with another male bunny. The vice president himself seems to have inspired the villain of the story. Oliver's book launch included a beautifully animated excerpt from the audiobook version that's available at audible.com. Along with the voices of Jeff Garland, RuPaul, Ari Kemper, and Jack McBrayer, it stars Jim Parsons, Jesse Tyler Ferguson, and John Lithgow.
Hello, my name is Marlon Bundo, and I am a bunny. This is the story of my very special day. As usual, after breakfast, I hopped to the garden to look at the flowers. That is when I saw him. The most beautiful bunny I had ever seen. My name is Marlon, I said, but my family calls me BOTUS. It's short for Bunny of the United States. It's a long story.
My name is Wesley, and my family calls me Wesley,
said Wesley. We went on a long hop together. We hopped through the garden. We hopped right inside the old stuffy house. We hopped through very boring meetings with very boring people. At the end of our hop, I said, Wesley, I don't want to hop without you ever again. And Wesley said,
That's funny, because I never want to hop without you, Marlon Bundo, ever again.
And we both said,
We will get married and hop together forever.
Wait! Said the stink bug.
You can't get married!
The stink bug was in charge. All the animals listened to him, even though he was very stinky.
Oof. Boy bunnies don't marry boy bunnies. Boy bunnies have to marry girl bunnies.
But don't worry, we had a plan. A plan that involved all the animals in the garden.
And if you want to know how the story turns out, you are going to have to buy the book. Please, buy it for your children, buy it for any child you know, or just buy it because you know it would annoy Mike Pence.
Proceeds of Oliver's book, which was written by one of his staff writers, Jill Twist, are going to the queer youth suicide prevention group, the Trevor Project, and the HIV support group, AIDS United. It quickly leaped over the Pence book to become the number one bestseller on Amazon. A shocked John Oliver quickly announced that an unexpected second printing was underway. The obvious anti-Pence flavor didn't prevent daughter Charlotte from buying Oliver's book. She told the Hill newspaper that he's giving proceeds of the book to charity, and we're also giving proceeds of our book to charity, so I really think that we can all get behind it. Before we all get warm and fuzzy, the stops along Charlotte Pence's promotional book tour include the Colorado Springs headquarters of Focus on the Family.
We have cleared off the table, the leftovers saved, washed the dishes, and put them away. I have told you a story and tucked you in tight. At the end of your knockabout day, as the moon sets its sail to carry you to sleep over the midnight sea, Well, I will sing you a song no one sang to me. May it keep you good company.
You can be anybody that you want to be. You can love whomever you will. You can travel any country where your heart leads. And know I will love you still. You can live by yourself. You can gather friends around. You can choose one special one. And the only measure of your words and your deeds will be the love you leave behind when you're gone.
Oh, the love you leave behind when you're gone.
Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Program material this week came from Francis O'Brien and Seth Eric Kotler, with thanks to Steve Pride, the Stoneman Douglas Drama Club and Student Choir, Jennifer Hudson and the DC Choir, Ray Anthony and his orchestra, and the Flirtations performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This way out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Prentham, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our individual listener donors who make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Google+. Smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on 2XX Canberra, Australian Capital Territory, WORT Madison, Wisconsin, KRUX Las Cruces, New Mexico, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station, where our big birthday bash is just around the corner, so stay tuned.